Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes with the stars, creators, and industry leaders on Broadway and beyond. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to the actor Deborah Messing. For most people, Messing won't need much of an introduction thanks to Will and Grace, the long-running NBC sitcom in which she starred for 11 seasons across 22 years. Theater fans, though, might think of her first as the playwright Julia Houston from NBC's short-lived but long-enduring backstage Broadway melodrama Smash. And coming up, she'll appear in the Netflix movie adaptation of Jason Robert Brown's musical 13. Right now, though, she's back on Broadway, playing the lead role in Noah Heidel's play, Birthday Candles. Messing is in the virtual studio with me to talk aging on stage without the assistance of makeup or costume changes, performing for a live studio audience as compared to performing for a Broadway audience, and what she knows about what's next for Smash. Don't miss the chance to get inside the minds of the top marketing leaders and creators at Variety's Entertainment Marketing Summit, presented by Deloitte on May 24th. This day-long conference explores the industry's constantly evolving brand and content strategies, featuring insightful speakers like Hulu's president Joe Early, Dakota Johnson, Aisha Curry, and top marketing visionaries from Spotify, Google, Netflix, WWE, HBO, TikTok, and the Super Bowl champions Los Angeles Rams. Take your career to the next level and form connections that will last far beyond the event. Seating is limited and tickets will go fast. So visit variety.com/marketing summit and register today. Hey, Deborah. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Yeah. So Birthday Candles is a project that you've been attached to for years now. You were in rehearsals for what would have been the spring 2020 Broadway production of the show when the shutdown hit. First of all, I guess before we talk about what kept you attached to the project, how did you first get involved?
The project started in 2018 at the Detroit Public Theater. And Noah Heidel, the playwright, asked Vivian Benesch, who ended up directing the Broadway play, to do the workshop. And the two of them went through several iterations together. And then when the Roundabout asked to have a reading, they were trying to think who they wanted to ask to do the reading. And ironically, it wasn't Vivian, who was my classmate in the MFA program at Tisch.
Oh, wow.
It was Noah who turned to her and said, "Weren't you classmates with Deborah Messing?" And she said, "Oh my God, she's perfect." So I got an email from her saying, "I know you're busy. You know, here's this play. We would love for you to read. Give it a read and see if you feel like you want to do it." Yeah. And I read it and I laughed out loud and I sobbed and I immediately called her back and I said, I'm in forever. Yeah. For as long as you have me, I'm in."
Yeah. Was the way the original production was originally scheduled, it was would have happened sort of right as you had just wrapped up the kind of return run of Will and Grace. Is stage something or Broadway something that was kind of on your mind to get back to specifically, or was it really the project that called you back?
Both, really. I mean, I would say that theater is my first love. It was always my plan to have a life in theater. If I was lucky enough to be able to be a journeyman, that was my goal when I got out of graduate school. And my life took me to Los Angeles for a chunk of time. And I was always looking for a way to get back on stage in New York. Yeah. I ultimately got back on doing Outside Mullingar by John Patrick Shanley, which I loved doing. But there were several projects prior to that that I was offered that we were trying to make work with the schedule, and it just never happened. So I think it's fair to say I've been frustrated for many, many, many years. And then obviously when I fell in love with this script, I was very myopic. I just was like, we have to do this.
And do you have a sense of, because you were, you know, in rehearsals and forming your character in 2020, do you have a sense of how Ernestine, the character you play, how your Ernestine now is different than she was the one you were playing back in 2020?
I think the whole play is different due to the pandemic. I think that when we returned, we all looked at each other, and the very first thing we said is, okay, we have to acknowledge that we are all different people than we were 2 years ago. And that sort of freed us up to not have to try to, replicate what we were doing. We were in our second week of rehearsal, you know, looking toward tech. I would say that the moments that explore loss and breach of connection, the surprise tragedies that happen in life, I think that the pandemic made all of those moments feel very present and very relevant. And so I think we all just, I think just dropped into it on a deeper level.
And what's it been like for you all? But you're back with almost the entirety of the cast that would have been in the 2020 production. What's it been like for you all to finally get to do it on stage?
Oh my God, it's heaven. We are so happy. Every day we warm up together at 7:15 before half hour, and we, you know, come together in a circle to wish each other a good show. And we are just constantly looking at each other and saying, we are the luckiest actors alive, because this group of actors, they're extraordinarily talented, number one, and they're incredibly generous collaborators. And we all have a similar vocabulary, I think is fair to say, acting vocabulary. And it feels like home. There is nothing about this experience that I would want to change. And I'm pretty confident that if you asked any of the cast members, they would say the same thing, which, you know, is a rare thing to be able to say. And so I think that every day, you know, we look at each other and say, okay, this is as good as it gets. So we are going to enjoy every minute of this, because, you know, we all know it's a limited run. I would say this is a role of my lifetime. And I would say that this is the theatrical experience of my life.
And it's literally the role of a lifetime, in that you live an entire lifetime over the course of, you know, whatever it is, 100 minutes or something. You go from 17 to 107, is that right?
Correct.
Tell me a little bit about the aging. It's a thing that you do without, you know, makeup, and you don't really have any costume changes or anything. You just sort of, you're there on stage getting older. Tell us a little bit about sort of how you approach that and what you found.
Well, aging 90 years and 90 minutes was the thing that excited me the most about the challenge. It made me feel like I was back in graduate school, where, for better or for worse, our instructors made us feel like we could do anything. And in my third year I was actually cast as an 86-year-old woman in a Harold Pinter play. Mm. And one of my teachers said, I think that's the best work you've done. And so it just made me feel like, okay, I'm going back into transformational art, which is the thing that excites me the most and inspires me the most. It also terrified me. Yeah. Because my goal was for the audience to experience my aging very gently, that there would except of course from 17 to 39, that there wouldn't be any jarring changes, because there is a dreamlike quality to the play. I wanted my aging to sort of reflect that. But I had a lot of help. I spoke with my vocal teacher, Liz Kaplan, who helps me with singing, but I said, you know, I want you to explain to me what happens to the larynx as we age. Mm. And it was fascinating. I learned so much from her about what happens during puberty, what happens during menopause, how each stage of life in a woman's life, what happens to their voice. So that was sort of, I would say, the building block, like the, you know, the structure from which I was going to try and fill. And then I visited an old age home and interviewed two people who were over 100, which was just fascinating. And I feel so grateful that they gave me their time. And then I watched a bunch of YouTube videos of interviews with people who were 100 years and older. And that was really delightful, but also instructive. Mm. And, you know, there are many, many things that happen in this play. So I also researched, you know, bipolar disorder and what happens to a family when they experience a suicide. Mm. And what happens when a family has to deal with dementia or a stroke. So all of those things I sort of put into different sort of subjects in my self-made school of, okay, I'm going to explore this today. I'm going to look into this. And in terms of my body, I met with my physical therapist. I actually was in a bad car accident several years ago. And so, you know, my neck is a mess, and my lower back is messed up from all the physical comedy from Will and Grace. Right. Because when you're 30, you're like, I'm going to throw my body into this. but I was able to talk with her again about, you know, how the body degrades, you know, starting with 30. And learning that, you know, from 30 to 35 is a huge jump in the body's degrading. And so, you know, where in the body things would start to get stuck, things that, you know, where gravity would sort of win out. And all of that made me feel comfortable and secure to then just do it. Mm. To just, you know, and I couldn't really find it until we started doing run throughs. Mm. And I turned to our director and Vivian, and I said, you know, you are my eyes. So you have to help me in terms of the aging. And, you know, when we first started doing it, she would say, you age too quickly. And I was like, oh, okay. And she was like, no, you have to wait until your voice from this to this was too much of a jump. Mm. And so it was fascinating to work internally, but also externally. Yeah.
Is there a quick and sort of way to give us a sense of what the through line is for your voice or your body in terms of, you know, you mentioned where your thing, where things start to break down for people, like where does Ernestine start to break down?
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you meet Ernestine, she has a very strong, solid voice, and is very physically adept. You know, she talks quickly. She runs around the stage easily. And I would say by 50, I think that as an audience member, you really notice from 39 to 50. I think you start to notice, oh, she's slowing down and her gait is changing. And my voice would slowly become less solid. And I would say that another tell would be when I got into my 80s, the voice goes much higher because of what happens to the vocal folds. And so it was a matter of, you know, finding that upper range that was lighter and breathier, but could also be heard. You know, that was a challenge. And then by the end of, you know, at 107, I'm basically at a 90 degrees as I'm walking. And that was actually somebody I saw on the sidewalk. And I couldn't believe it. But yeah, I just slowly sort of folding over, and the gait sort of changing pace, and also the weight of the footsteps.
I'll have more with Deborah right after the break. Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com. And now, here's more with the actor Deborah Messing.
You spent years on Will and Grace performing in front of a live studio audience. How much is that similar or different to the experience of performing live for a Broadway audience?
The reason why I love doing Will and Grace was because outside of the theater, it is the medium that is most closely experienced as a theatrical experience, because it is in front of a live audience, because there are several cameras and those cameras are far away. And so you don't ever have to play to a camera or minimize yourself for film. I would say, I guess I would say just having that dialogue with the audience is the thing that feels the most in common. I mean, with Will and Grace, you know, we would only run through a scene once or twice, and then they would run out and say, okay, cut this line, cut this, cut this, cut this. This is your new joke, your new joke, your new joke. And so literally it was like improv in a way, because I would say 25% of what you see on television, we're saying those lines for the first time. So obviously that you experience it in your body in a completely different way than when you are really living and growing and expanding in a part. But, you know, we knew when a joke worked and when it didn't. Right. And similarly, there are, you know, moments in the play and we're able to sort of define what kind of audience we have based on their reactions to those moments. But that's really it. There's really nothing like it. You know, it's the coming together and working as a unit that makes it so magical and so special. Because when you're working on a film or a single camera television show, inevitably that camera is just going to be very, you know, inches away from your face. And the whole point of that shot is just what you do and has nothing to do with anybody else that you're acting with. And they often take the actor away from you because you can't even see it. So it feels less like art to me. And it feels more like a craft, a certain skill set that you need to have. But, you know, the fulfillment of finding the character and living in the character. I mean, I lived with Grace 11 years and already, you know, my experience of Ernestine is far more satisfying than Grace.
And is that a function of living sequentially or living or re-experiencing, or do you have a sense of why that connection is so much deeper for you in the character?
I guess I would say because she ages 90 years and because she goes through so much, you know, it forces me to consider things that I normally am not asked to consider when it's just one role that is based in one moment in time. Yeah. And so I think I feel it very deeply. The thing that I think is magical about this play is it seems to make people feel like it's incredibly personal to them. So when I read it, I was crying because I was thinking about my mother. And I was like, oh, this play was written for me, you know? And then, but every night when I come off stage and I see audience members and they're crying or they're, you know, or they're laughing and they say, oh my God, that was my grandmother up there. Or, oh my God, we went through that. That really hit home. I think that's sort of the genius of what Noah has sort of laid out.
Yeah. Okay. Because this is a theater podcast, we have to talk about Smash for just a second.
Sure.
It is, of course, something that has a really rabid following, particularly among theater folks, among probably a lot of people who are coming to see Birthday Candles. What's been your experience of that fandom, which has lasted way beyond the lifespan of that show?
I know. Yeah. I love Smash so much, I can't even put into words. Being able to play a character where it's my job to sit behind a table and watch real Broadway actors sing and dance in front of me for hours on end. Mm. I mean, I should have been paying them for the opportunity to do that. Mm. So I never wanted it to end. But in some way, I think there is an overlap in terms of you know, the audience for Will and Grace and the audience for Smash, in that I think the fans of Smash felt unrepresented prior to Smash. Yeah. And, you know, or diminished or judged for choosing a life in the theater. And I mean, I don't think it's a stretch to say that most people who choose this life, at some point, someone very close to them makes you feel like this choice is kind of like, you don't want to grow up. You don't want to have a real job. And Smash was like the Wizard of Oz. It pulled the curtain back and you were able to see everything that goes into it and the raw talent that is required and the business aspect of it and how complicated it is. And I think that is why it has such a rabid fan base.
Yeah. Do you still get asked about your character's scarves, for instance, and all the?
I don't, and I will always defend her scarves. I will always defend them. She was a Brooklyn mom at the time, at a certain time in, and you know, from the beginning, they wanted something to sort of make her stand out as someone who was not a performer. But I do think it's funny that there were such strong feelings about all of her scarves.
It is funny. I feel like there is a lot of people like to dunk on that show and people love that show. And they are often the same people, right? Like it's because I feel like they're so attached to the subject matter that they have very strong opinions, I think.
Yes. Yes. Mm. I mean, you know, I feel like when somebody creates a world, when someone creates a universe such as the people in the world of Smash, that they should do what they think is the journey of all of these characters. And if it doesn't work, we all say we did our best. I don't think it ever really works to fire the person who created the show after a year and bring someone on who had nothing to do with the show to run it, because it made it feel like two different shows, two different years. It confused our audience. And I think that was the reason why it failed. But you know, we still, you know, have joked about, okay, if they want to do like a Smash movie, I'm in,
right?
You know,
I mean, or a return, like a Will and Grace return, right? Or
yes. Where are they now? Yeah. Of course.
And, you know, Bob Greenblatt and Neil Marin are working on a Broadway musical adaptation of this. Do you know anything about that? Are you involved in that? Would you want to be involved in that?
I am so excited. I mean, I obviously, while we were shooting Smash, everyone was looking at each other and was like, okay, when is this going to be a Broadway show? Right. So it was just a matter of time and a matter of finding the right book writer. I've spoken to Bob and I have some insight into what the show will be.
Can you tell us about any of it?
No.
Yeah, I figured.
I'm not involved in it. But I am very, very, very excited to see it.
If someone were to say, hey, we're doing karaoke and we want you to sing a song from Smash, which one would you sing? What's your favorite song, Smash song?
Oh, gosh. Assuming I could sing it?
Sure, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, fantasy. Yeah.
Keep on moving the line.
Okay. Yeah.
It's the 11 o'clock you know, song that Megan Hilty sings that it just keeps modulating up and up and up. I mean, it just, I remember we shot that in the Plaza, and I remember sitting at the piano and watching her do it over and over and over again. And I just felt Christian and I both just sort of levitate with just absolute excitement and shock about what she was doing. You know, it's just, and that's, you know, that's Shaman and Whitman.
Speaking of singing, you're in a new musical that is coming out on Netflix sometime this summer, I believe, late summer, 13. Yes. Tell us a little bit about your involvement in that. Did you see the show back when it was on Broadway?
I never saw it. I did not. I obviously knew Neil from Smash, and I was informed that they were expanding the book and including a few adults, namely his mother and his grandmother and his father. And they wanted me to play the mother. And they said, and you'll be singing. And I sang in Dirty Dancing, the remake of Dirty Dancing. Yeah. And that was really scary and exciting. And I just thought, you know what? I'm still scared to do it, so let's do it. We ended up going up during, you know, right in the middle of the pandemic in Toronto, where things were really locked down. And I spent a couple of weeks with, you know, all of these kids who were so talented and so just green and fresh, and you know, you just could see the dreams that they have for their future, and it was amazing. It really was amazing, and I got to do a duet with my son, and I can't wait to see it.
Yeah,
it comes out August 12th.
Great, yeah. And you're going to be on in Birthday Candles until May 29th, and Tony season is coming up. What's your feeling about, you know, award seasons and competition and all that stuff? How do you deal with it?
Oh, boy. I guess I would say I hope that my work just speaks for itself. You know, I've been watching the Tonys since I was a kid. And as an adult, I don't think I've ever been aware of there being campaigns for Tony nominations, at least, you know, not as a non-Tony voter.
Right.
Not in the same way that it does for the Emmys and the Oscars, where it's very concerted. But the fact that we're even having a conversation with the term the Tonys in it, it really is a dream come true.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that's a cliche, but it is.
And what's next for you after Birthday Candles?
Oh boy, I'm gonna sleep and take my son to college. And I am developing a TV show that would shoot on the East Coast. And just reading scripts. And you know, my agents, I would say, might be a little frustrated with me right now because my standards are so high in terms of the kind of character that I am able to sink my teeth into that, you know, what they send for film or is like, no, that's not very exciting to me. You know, it's hard to go to that from Ernestine. But from the time I graduated from NYU, I've always been that way where I'm like, the script is the thing. It's always the thing. and it's worth waiting for. Mm. And so I'm just going to continue to do what I've always done, which is, you know, just continue to try and learn and grow and hope that my work will somehow produce opportunities that are varied in the future.
Well, we will look forward to the script that gets you back on stage again after Pickles. Oh,
yeah. Me too.
Thanks so much, Deborah. Thanks for your time. Great to talk to you.
Thank you so much. It was great talking with you.
That was Deborah Messing, now starring on Broadway in Birthday Candles. If you like what you're hearing on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, I'd really appreciate it if you took the time to rate and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps us grow our audience of folks who love theater as much as you and I do. Or tell a friend about Stagecraft, or give us a shout out on social media. Find past episodes and subscribe on all the pod places, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and on the Broadway Podcast Network, which is a great place to find more theater for your ears. Until next episode, find me on Twitter at @GCoxVariety. Thanks for listening, and see you at the theater.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.